In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
America was founded on the dual principles of independence and good governance. And what we're seeing in Eastern Oregon right now with the standoff near Burns is the failure of the government to uphold its end of the bargain. Slaves in their huts are actually very safe. They have little to fear because their master keeps them safe at night. But they're still slaves. And the only thing that slaves have to fear is their master. When's the last time you even thought of the government, federal or state or local, as a public servant? Isn't that their proper role, to serve the people, to serve and to protect? Instead, we've become the servants. On today's show, we're talking about the standoff in Eastern Oregon outside of Burns. It's happening because people are fed up with the federal government because it is no longer in its proper role. Now, we've talked about states taking control of the federal lands before, but would we even be talking about this if the federal government was actually doing a marvelous job of administering those lands, putting them to the best and highest purpose? Shouldn't the role of government be a facilitator, a concierge, if you like? Shouldn't the role of government be to make things as easy for people to become prosperous? Oh, you want to start a business? Well, here's some help with that. You want to farm or log or graze on public land? Absolutely. Here are the permits. And not only here they are, but let me walk you through the process. If the government was doing its job and not preventing people from doing their jobs, we probably wouldn't even be talking about this. The land should be transferred to the states because that's what's expected in the Constitution. It should be about local control. And yet we have an odd situation in Oregon where outsiders, people not even from Oregon, are protesting the lack of local control. On today's show, Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers and Representative Ken Ivory, these are two people who have been fighting for these kinds of issues for a long time. And does this armed response by this so-called militia help or hurt the effort for states to take control of the federal lands within their borders? I'd like to welcome now Stuart Rhodes. He is the founder and president of Oath Keepers. And, of course, he's got his ear to the ground as all of this continues to unfold over there in Eastern Oregon. Stuart, it's good to talk to you again.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's my understanding that the original number of armed protesters that seized the federal buildings over there at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge has grown. Do you have a clear idea now of how many people are out there?
No, we don't. We don't think it's much more than 20, just by what the media has said, but I really don't have a first-hand knowledge of that.
And do you have any contacts within the group itself or people around that group or in the area, I mean?
We have people on the ground. I have Sergeant Major Santoro, Joseph Santoro, retired. He is on the board of directors of Oath Keepers. He is there on the ground right now. And he has been out there along with the media to do the press conferences every day.
But he's not.
Yes, we've had some people out there.
And is he part of the group or is he just in the area?
No. We have nobody inside the wildlife refuge who's taking part in the occupation.
Okay.
What we do have is we have Oath Keepers who are there, along with the 3%ers as part of the Pacific Patriot Network, serving as a buffer. And we have quite a few people there right now and more on the way to serve as a buffer to hopefully prevent another Waco situation. We are encouraging the feds to handle this like the Freeman standoff as opposed to a Waco-style raid. We don't think there's any need for that, and we're concerned that the political hacks in Washington, D.C., will attempt to pressure the military or the FBI into dropping the hammer. So that's our purpose of being there, is to try to defuse that and prevent that from happening.
Are you hearing rumors that there is any kind of military buildup right now around them?
Yes, I did hear that about a week ago, and I put that on our website. Of course, I've gotten a bunch of flack for it, but It was from a credible source. The main point, though, is that we don't trust the Obama administration. We are concerned that they are tired of losing. They lost Bundy Ranch, and to a more limited extent, they lost at Sugar Pine Mine and also in Lincoln, Montana. And our concern is that they are not willing to lose again. Mm. And I think that's a politically driven viewpoint that they might have, which could cause them to do something stupid, like attempt to drop the hammer, to make an example.
Yeah.
And that could be disastrous. That's why I sent Sergeant Major Santoro there, and in his press release statement, he let it be known that there are no more free Wacos, as Mike Vanderbilt puts it, the founder of the 3%er movement. There is no such thing as a free Waco. That if they do drop the hammer, that it will cause a split inside the military and will also cause many veterans in the country to react very aggressively. So we don't think it's a good idea for them to try to make an example of these people. And so we want the military and the FBI special operations guys to understand this and to simply stand down and refuse to follow his orders.
And did you say that he did meet already with the people that were there on the ground in terms of from the government?
Yes. The 3%ers of Idaho and Joseph Rice and Baron Rapolo, our local guys in Oregon, had already gone and talked to the FBI. And then Sergeant Major Santoro, when he arrived, he also went and met with the FBI.
Did you get any information from him in terms of the results of those meetings? Did he feel positive about them? Or did he feel like they were listening to him?
The tactical guys on the ground and the FBI don't want to fight either. It's very clear they don't want this. Hmm. But the problem is that they're not really driving the bus. It's the politicians in D.C. And this is the way it always goes. The politicians in D.C. are not the ones that are going to bleed and die. It's going to it's going to be the warrior class on both sides, guys who are still in and the guys who are, standing up and saying, you're not going to do this here. So what we want to see, like I said, is handle it like the Alcatraz takeover by the Indian radicals back in the 70s. Everybody was moved. They held the Alcatraz for months, and it ended peacefully. Or treat it like the Freeman standoff. And there's no hostages. There's no one near that place. It's just an empty building. So the only reason they would do it, feel motivated to go drop a hammer on these guys and do a raid, is for political reasons, that they're tired of being embarrassed politically. So and that's not a legitimate reason to use that kind of force.
In terms of the leaders of the organization or the group that has taken over the refuge there, do you know any of the leaders personally?
Yes, I know Ammon Bundy, because we were there at the Bundy standoff in Nevada. Him, his father's Cliven Bundy, and we went there to protect them against the very real threat of being hammered by the U.S. military or the federal law enforcement and their military contractors. So, yes, I know him.
Anybody else in that group that you know of?
No, I don't know any. Well, I know Blaine Cooper from the fact that he went up to the Sugar Pine Mine operation and Lincoln operation as an independent journalist. I've met him, too.
And overall, if you had to assess the group, would you say that they're pretty reasonable people, or do you have reasons for concern?
I think Ammon Bundy and his brothers are salt of the earth people. I think that they have the best of intentions. I have less confidence in some of the people that are in there with them.
Okay.
So, but I really don't want to get into that. I don't want to be accused of airing dirty laundry. I just want to tell you that I think Ammon has the best intentions, and he's the one in charge.
All right, let's go ahead and take our first break. Lots more with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Coming up, we're going to be talking about their whole approach and getting involved in this to begin with. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. He's the president and founder of that organization. Stuart, what's the website again? Is it oathkeepers.org?
That's correct.
Okay. We'll make sure that we link that up on iSpyRadio.com so you can visit them. Absolutely great organization. And why don't you tell us real quick about Oath Keepers? We normally do that, and I totally flew by that in the first segment.
Well, we are as an association of both current serving and retired military, police, and other first responders, such as EMTs, firefighters, search and rescue. And the main mission is to defend the Constitution. We swore an oath to defend and remind those who are in current service of their obligation to do the same by refusing unlawful orders, such as any orders to go hammer the people at the refuge in Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to date, the situation there doesn't seem to be dissipating, and now it's being reported that the group has taken down some government fencing so cattle can then cross into federal lands unrestricted. As founder of Oath Keepers, you've taken, from what I hear anyway, you've taken a strong stance against the actions taken by the Bundys. Why are you opposed to what they're doing?
No, I oppose the method, not the mission.
Right.
I believe, as they do, that all of the Western lands should belong to the states and the people of the states. And I do believe that the federal government stole those lands illegitimately when the states entered the Union. It was not on equal footing. They did not give the states the land that they deserved. So we agree on that. I disagree with his method because he did not have the buy-in of the locals or the knowledge of the locals or the knowledge of the other folks who were at that protest that one last Saturday for the Hammonds. I agree, though, that the Hammonds were wrongly imprisoned. I think that's atrocious. But I just think it was a wrong strategy and a wrong tactical thing to do. But, you know, hey, Dies and Cass were here. So now I do think that this should be treated as a sit-in. And I think Ammon has correctly de-escalated and toned down the rhetoric. And it's basically no different than what the leftists do when they go and occupy the dean's office. The only difference is these guys are armed. But, you know, they're Westerners. Everyone carries a gun. Get over it. So I think we need to, like, tone down the rhetoric and relax and look at what really is really going on. Like I said before, it's an empty building. They're in the middle of friggin' nowhere. There's no emergency. There's no hostages. There's no situation like that that justifies any kind of force being used against them right now. So if the feds should just handle this like the Freeman standoff, long-term, let it drag out, or the Alcatraz occupation by the Indians.
Yeah, and hopefully this can be done in a peaceful manner. It is kind of surprising. Yeah, it is kind of surprising that the Obama administration has stayed somewhat quiet during all of this. And you mentioned in the first segment there that that's the goal is to keep them from blowing this up into something that doesn't need to be.
Right.
What's your take on that? Do you think that they will remain that they are in fact going to find a peaceful resolution on this, or do you think they actually are salivating trying to make this more of a Waco type situation?
I think some of them are salivating at the opportunity to do this, or they're just pissed off at being, like I said, being punked, and so they don't want to have it happen again. So, but hopefully the adults in the room will prevail, as they did at Bundy Ranch. And this is something that has to be important, needs to be stated, is a month after Bundy Ranch wound down, in the Washington Times, they reported that the Obama administration did consider the use of military force at Bundy Ranch, but decided against it. So it's possibly on the table again. It was during Bundy Ranch, as reported in the Washington Times, and it's possible it's on the table again. I wouldn't doubt it. So I think that cooler heads have to prevail. People inside the Pentagon have to put the brakes on. People inside the FBI need to put the brakes on and say, this is not the way to handle it. You know, do not go with option B. Stick with option A, which would be the traditional, cordon it off, have negotiators, wait them out, go through that whole long process. So hopefully that's what they do. But the radical left is just demanding blood. They're clamoring and beating drums and screaming and yelling for the hammer. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I don't know that I've necessarily seen the radical – well, let's put it this way. I haven't necessarily seen calls for that in the mainstream media. Where are you seeing people on the far left saying that they need to go in and go in with a hammer?
All over Twitter. All over Twitter, Democratic Underground, Daily Kos, and just go out there and you'll see it. And I think that that mindset is probably reflected in the political circles in the Obama administration. I wouldn't doubt it. So that's why our mission there is to stand in between and say, look, we don't agree with what he did, but that does not give you the green light to hammer them. So that's why we're there, and we're going to be there in even more numbers this weekend to make that very clear that we're not going to let them hammer them. We're going to be there to do our very best for them.
Yeah. Okay, let's go and take a break a little early here. Lots more with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Their website, if you'd like to go visit that, is oathkeepers.org. And, of course, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Coming up next, we'll be talking about the aftermath of this standoff. And welcome back. We're talking about the situation over in Eastern Oregon today, over in Burns, and the armed conflict that continues to be a standoff there and hopefully will remain just a standoff. Stuart, let's talk real quick because I know that you're an attorney. Have there been laws that have been broken
Actually,
here?
I'm no longer an attorney.
Oh, you're no longer. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, so you're a recovering attorney then.
That's right.
But in terms of laws that have been broken, do you have an opinions on what that would mean then for the people that are there? Because, I mean, obviously it's not...
possibly trespass. They might try to throw breaking and entering at them, although the buildings were unlocked. So, I mean, there's really not a whole lot there. I mean, what's the you know, what's the worst they can throw at them? They might try to throw domestic terrorism at them, but I think that's kind of stretching it. And all they've done is go and occupy an empty building. So they made no overt threats to anybody. They simply said they'll defend themselves if they're attacked. So, like I said, I think we need to dial back their rhetoric, just call it a friggin' occupation, an armed sit-in. I think it's a better way to refer to it, and just let things play out over time. Give the locals time. The local Committee of Safety, the AMN, helped form. They wrote a letter asking him to leave. They've yet to give it to him, but they've had several town hall meetings. The sheriff has gone out and talked to him. Give the locals time to work this out themselves. I think that's the right answer, not having the FBI or the feds come in and trying to force the issue. So hopefully that's what they're doing. I don't like the possibility of them doing something else, but so far they have not done anything to out there at the refuge itself. There is an indicator in town, though, that they've been doing things like following people and making people think that it's the Patriots following them around and making the locals afraid. It turns out it's actually the feds.
Interesting. Well, it's pretty obvious that a lot of ranchers and landowners have had it with the overreach of the federal government. I mean, we frequently read where the EPA is constantly trying to usurp a rancher's ability to take care of their own stock. I mean, making everything difficult for ranchers to do, you know, their job to raise beef and
absolutely.
So on. Absolutely.
Look at the Hammonds. They beat the feds twice, the BLM and the Forest Service twice in court cases, and then they got the payback. They got the retribution, you know. This is what happens. Anybody that stands up against them, they'll eventually come around and charge them with some kind of nonsense, some kind of criminal charge. They did it to one guy who dug a ditch on his own property. They criminally charged him. Two of the Hammond's neighbors now are being charged with arson, same kind of strategy, charged him with arson. Everybody in rural America does burns. They burn down grass and clear it for pasture all the time.
Yeah.
So, but this is what you're vulnerable to. So they're using everything they possibly can to hammer anyone who stands up.
Yeah, they sure do. In terms of going forward for your own movement and also for the movement for our next guest Ken Ivory, who has been advocating the transfer of federal lands to the states. Do you see this whole event as maybe giving them a little bit of a black eye in terms of PR, either for yourself or for other groups like Ken's?
Well, you know, I think in the end it's a net gain because of the attention that's been brought to the issue. I think in the long run, I think it's going to be a positive, so long as it ends peacefully. But if they drop the hammer, then it's going to be a civil war in this country. Then we can just throw the whole political question out the window, you know. Mm. So, but I think as long as they don't, I think in the end it'll be a net gain because it will have brought more attention to the issue and the persecution of the people in the West.
Yeah. Well, not only does this bring attention to the whole situation in the West, but also when it comes to things like defending the Second Amendment and property rights, because if the government is out of compliance with its own laws, I mean, don't we have a duty to stop it and forcefully if necessary?
Well, certainly, but there's always a question of strategy. I prefer to defend somebody who invites us and asks for help defending an actual person. We did that at Bundy Ranch. We did that at Sugar Pine Mine. We did that at the White Hope Mine in Lincoln, Montana. That's my preferred way to do it. So my preference is to find a rancher who's willing to let his cattle out on the wildlife refuge. But hey, like I said, we're where we're at. Let's deal with what we got. Yeah. What we got, let's deal with it.
Yeah, and well, it definitely does come down to locals defending their own local control for sure. Stuart, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Your website one more time, oathkeepers.org.
Thank you very much.
And coming up next, Representative Ken Ivory, whom the New York Times considers public enemy number one when it comes to the federal lands issue. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the situation over in eastern Oregon, there at the Wildlife Refuge, and the continuing armed standoff that is occurring there over the issue of land rights. And really no one in the nation better to talk about the whole issue of the transfer of federal lands to the states than Ken Ivory. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Mark, always my pleasure.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention real quick, you've got a couple of, you were the president of American Lands Council. You have now transitioned to another organization, Federalism in Action. Their website, federalisminaction.org, and there you're serving as the director of the Free the Lands Project. So what's that all about?
Well, so there are three ways forward to accomplish what we want to in freeing the lands. One is education. A second is legislation, a third is litigation, and I'm primarily the educator. And so Free the Lands Project is something that American Lands Council and Federalism Action came together on to develop, and it's a way of educating and primarily now focusing on our friends east of the Rockies. We've done a lot of education in and throughout the West, and I think people are starting to understand the promises that statehood are the same, the constitutional obligations of the federal government to transfer the land are the same. It's already been done before. It's the only solution big enough. Now we're going to start carrying this message throughout the nation and primarily east of the Rockies. And as we continue to work, American Lands Council will continue to work on government affairs and legislation, lobbying, and we'll stay in touch with them very closely. And so this is an opportunity. The message is really starting to resonate. As of course, as you saw this week, front page of the New York Times.
Sure.
The message is getting out across the nation because really, Mark, we have the opportunity to have our hand on the rudder of a modern-day Louisiana purchase.
Yeah, and that's a great way to put it because, I mean, you think of the sudden expanse of land that all these states would then have more access to start opening those up for development.
Yeah, land and liberty has always meant peace and prosperity.
That's right.
The American formula.
That's right. Yeah, and the whole notion of private property, I mean, you think of what a huge change that was back in the day when the American experience really first started. I mean, it was almost unheard of that you would have your own, you would own the land. I mean, that they left Europe in droves to come here simply for that experience.
That's exactly right. Now, we have some unique challenges because now we're 150 years down the road from statehood where the federal government has not kept the same constitutional obligations and statehood promises. And so now we've got a whole series of property rights in access and recreation and mining and grazing that have developed that are in themselves property rights. And so you don't just sell off that land and undo those property rights. So that's why we say federal public lands become state public lands to manage the multiple use of these rights that have now vested in a number of areas and sort that out at the most local level.
Ken, sometimes this issue is described as retaking federal lands, but it's not like the feds gave the lands to the states and then, whoops, took it back. Isn't it more accurate to say that the feds released the land piecemeal as states were able to manage them? Is that a better way to describe the issue?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it depends at what point in history you want to start. If you want to start at the beginning of the public lands question, it was Maryland in 1776 saying, hey, guys, we have to solve this Western land question so we know how to fund the Revolutionary War. And then in 1780, they're in the middle of the revolution and they're broke. And France said, we're not going to loan you any money unless you can get this confederation worked out. And Maryland said, until we resolve that these Western lands are only going to be created into equal states and the proceeds used to pay the war, we're not going to have states come out of this revolution on an unequal basis. That's where the public land question started. So the states ceded their lands to their union in trust for two purposes. Create states with equal power and equal opportunity to determine their own destiny and to use the proceeds of disposing of those lands. If any are sold, they use the proceeds to pay the national debt. That's how it started moving forward. So then all states to the west of the original 13, every single one of them, Oregon's promise is the same as Illinois's. They said, we will make sure that the federal union has clean title so they can dispose of the lands the fastest possible for the most amount of money, because that benefits everyone. And then the states control the land and govern the land and determine themselves after those lands are disposed of. And so every state in their Enabling Act facilitated clean title to the federal government in order to speed up the process and facilitate the process of disposing of the land. Promises east and west of the Rockies, exactly the same.
But there's this notion that somehow that the federal government came in and took the land away from the states. Is that a correct statement?
Not exactly. Not exactly. Now, in Oregon, there is something to that in the ONC lands. So the ONC lands were, in fact, granted to railroads and private interests, and those railroads and things didn't develop, and the federal government came in and took those back. But by and large, if you think of the federal government as a trustee, the state said, we'll trust you to have clean title to these lands for the purpose of disposing, and only for the purpose of disposing of the lands. You can't keep them and do whatever you want with them. You're just a trustee. And so they gave clean title to the federal government for that purpose. And over time, the states kind of forgot their rights, and the federal government kind of
usurped them, yeah.
Exerted more and more control. And now they just act like they own it outright instead of being a trustee. And so now it's a matter of just getting the federal government to honor the very same constitutional obligations, the very same statehood promises and rights that exist with all states east of the Rockies.
Okay, we're coming up on a break, so I think we'll take that a little early, give us a little bit more time in the next segment to talk about the impacts the events in Harney County and the standoff there will mean to the future of the effort for states to take control of the federal lands in their borders. Lots more with Ken Ivory. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking to Ken Ivory. He is with... he is a state representative, I should say, with Utah, and he's also the director of the Free the Lands Project, a new project by the organization Federalism in Action. Their website, federalisminaction.org, if you'd like to go check them out. And Ken, we were talking about this notion of transferring the lands to the states, and just wouldn't it have been a lot easier that when Oregon entered the Union or any of these other states, that then there was just a blanket transfer of lands to Oregon or to whatever state it was that was entering the Union at the time? Wouldn't that have been a lot simpler?
Well, it would have been, but what the states were trying to preserve, and they all acted in good faith, all of the people in the nation put their resources into acquiring the Western lands, and so the idea was to pay that investment back. And so out of the distribution, the disposal of the land, they pay that investment back, and then the rest of the lands are open for settlement and growth. Now it wasn't a one-to-one quid pro quo. The idea was get people on the lands, get them productive. And so that's why in the Constitution, Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, they use the word dispose. They don't use the word sell. They say sell if you can sell, but you have to dispose. You have to get rid of title. Federal government, you don't have authority to hold the lands. You have to get rid of title. And so by disposing of the land, that puts people on the land and it makes it productive. And so when they're paying taxes at the local level, they're paying taxes at the national level. And that's what helps the lands be more productive and helps the nation grow and gets people tied to the land, to protecting the land and protecting the nation. And so that was the idea of establishing the settlement of the nation.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening specifically right now out there in Harney County and this seizure of the federal wildlife area by this armed militia. At least that's how they are being described anyway, as a militia. I'm not sure that I quite buy that. But anyway, it does seem like this whole thing has more than its share of irony. You've got a situation where people from outside the area who are there to protest people from outside the area making decisions that impact people in the area. Outsiders protesting outsiders, so to speak. I mean, if the essence of what they're fighting about is lack of local control, isn't it just more than a tad ironic that these people are there about, fighting for these local people?
Right, right. I mean, you can certainly understand the frustration, right?
Yeah,
and what
absolutely.
Happened to the Hammonds was absolutely horrendous. I mean, here you've got these farmers that the trial judge said they were the salt of the earth, pillars of the community. Mm. They were using fire as a preventative tool to reduce the fire risk on the neighboring federal land. They set fires on their land that inadvertently got onto 100 acres or so of federally managed land, and they try them as terrorists. And then, Mark, right now at the same time, in South Dakota, the federal agencies set the same kind of backfires using fire as a management tool. It got into 10,000 acres of public and private land, burned down homes and barns, and the farmers applied just for relief. They didn't apply for anyone to go to jail as a terrorist, just pay back the damage, and the federal agencies have refused. And so you understand the frustration because
let me interrupt you there. Why would the federal agencies refuse just to be recompensated for whatever the damages were?
It's a great question. It's a great question because the federal agencies have no accountability, right? They don't respond. They're not held accountable to you and me or anyone else. When's the last time you voted for a local director of the BLM or the Forest Service?
Yeah, good point.
You know, there's no accountability there, and that's the whole point. So you've got federal bureaucrats thousands of miles away that put policy over people. They put politics over the health and productivity of the land, and so you get these arbitrary results when you've got bureaucrats trying to manage unique Oregon land. And so the frustration is understandable, right? As a nation, as America, we tell the world and we tell our people from the beginning that America is the land of liberty. It's the promise of equal opportunity, determining your own destiny, governing yourselves, having control of your own piece of property. And that's the promise that we make. And our nation is not living up to that promise. 53% of Oregon is federally controlled, with the same statehood promises of Iowa that's 0.1% federally controlled. And so we're completely out of harmony with who we say we are. And until we get back into harmony, there's going to be frustration and discord. And until we deal with that underlying issue and free these lands in accordance with the constitutional obligations.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they have taken the tactics that they have because our previous guest, Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers, pretty much agreed with that he would have liked to have seen a different type of response to this type of thing, moving in as an armed quasi-military militia, however you want to phrase it, was not the best action, especially since they're from outside the area. So, but then you're left with the question of what should have been the proper response here. I mean, you had a peaceful protest, but these protests, these peaceful ones, don't seem to be making much of a headway anymore. And clearly the armed response did get more coverage than the peaceful protest ever would have. So is this a blessing in disguise, maybe?
Well, in terms of the fact that the nation is discussing this, perhaps. But the protests need to be more in line with Martin Luther King and less in line with Rambo. This is our constitutional system, right? We have the blessings of a legal constitutional system that the founders didn't have. They sacrificed and risked everything that we would have this rule of law and the ability to govern ourselves. And so here are the tools that we have, Mark. In the Declaration, it says that governments exist to secure our inalienable rights, and they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Well, that's us. And so this is not a spectator sport. If we want our leaders to secure our rights to property and liberty and self-governance, we need to hire leaders that are relentlessly committed to freeing the lands. Just like Thomas Hart Benton, Benton, Oregon is named after Thomas Hart Benton, Democrat senator from Missouri. Missouri was 90% federally controlled. Thomas Hart Benton said, "My election to the U.S. Senate found me doing battle for changing this whole system. The federal government was a monopolizer of the vacant lands of the West." He's talking about Missouri and Florida and Illinois and Iowa and Louisiana. They were a monopolizer of the lands of the West, and like all monopolies, it results in hardship. And so we need to fix our eyes steadily on the period of the speedy extinction of the federal title to all the lands within our boundaries. And because they were relentless, they won. They succeeded. And so this is an election year. This is our opportunity as the boss in our constitutional system to get educated, to mobilize, and to hire and inspire leaders that are relentlessly committed to freeing the lands, to securing our full statehood birthrights on terms of equality with states east of the Rockies, just like Thomas Hart Benton did, for whom Benton County, Oregon is named.
Well, but isn't that also part of the problem, though, is, you know, we would all like to operate within the constitutional framework that we have, and yet the federal government, it seems to be constantly operating outside that constitution. It's almost ignoring the laws of the land.
Well, it is, but think about the last election that you had 2 years ago. 15 people per voting precinct could have completely changed the focus and direction of the state of Oregon. 15 people. Mark, I'm sure you probably know 15 people, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people out there have one or two friends. And so all it takes is 15 people in a voting precinct getting a little bit educated and getting engaged to completely change the situation in Oregon. Well, that also can change the situation in Congress. we have all the constitutional tools we need to secure our full statehood birthrights if we get engaged, and we demand that those who represent us at the local, state, and national level use their constitutional powers to secure our rights to life, liberty, property, self-governance, and secure our full statehood birthrights, just like states east of the Rockies.
Yeah, you know, I hear that, and every time I do, I'm reminded of that saying from Plato, one of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. Lots more to talk about with Representative Ken Ivory out of Utah, talking about the transfer of federal lands to state control. Everyone stay with us. Coming up, we'll be talking about how we resolve the issue and what to do next. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Representative Ken Ivory out of Utah. He is the former president of the American Lands Council and is now directing the Free the Lands Project. And an upcoming website that you can visit is freethelands.org. They're working on building the content out for that. But clearly, Ken is the guy. Even mentioned in the New York Times, he is the guy for the spearhead for the effort to force states to take control of federal lands within their borders. As you say so often, that I really like, honor the promise. I think that really sums up the whole battle very much. So in terms of resolving the issue here, what do we do next? Because I'd like you to put on your legal mediator hat and or your legislator's hat when you've got multiple viewpoints from multiple constituents. How could the Harney situation be resolved in a way that both sides feel satisfied with that resolution?
Well, I think what needs to happen, and you're starting to see some Northern leaders begin to step up, but I think what they need to do is they need to call for a diffusion. I think they need to call for a summit, and they call for a summit to examine the issues. This is not working. Federal management, distant bureaucratic management of unique Oregon land, it's not working for the forest. It's not working for wildlife. It's not working for air quality or watershed management. It's not working for the economies and local communities. It's not working for recreation access. I think they should call and hold a summit on that issue of it's not working and why and what do we do about it, and take this energy and this opportunity to look deeply at that problem and then see how the solutions for Oregon present themselves.
If you had an opportunity to talk to the so-called militia that's out there, I mean, is that what you would urge them to do? Would you be urging them to basically, okay, it's time for you guys to go, or what would you be telling them?
Yeah, they could perhaps make the same call and say, okay, they brought attention to the issue, call for an examination of the problem, and then also call on people to get engaged using the constitutional tools that we have to govern ourselves and affect change in our system, which this is an election year. There's no better opportunity than this year to hire and inspire leaders that are relentlessly committed to the principles of self-determination and securing the full statehood rights of equal opportunity and determining our own destiny. And they can make that call and then disband and go home and call on Oregon leaders to step and do their work. And then it's up to the people of Oregon.
Yeah. Well, it sure would be nice to hear see that kind of resolution, because right now the latest out of them is that the only way that they will leave is once the federal lands have been transferred over to Oregon, and I just don't see that happening in the immediate future. But that brings up a broader question, and we've got some time here to deal with this, is the broader legal analysis of what's going on with this entire movement in terms of transferring the federal lands to the states. And just recently, you guys had some movement on that, actually, there in Utah. You guys have had some legal analysis. Why don't you talk to our audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. In the state of Utah, we formed a legislative commission for the stewardship of public lands. We funded that with a couple of $1 million, and we put out a request for proposal for legal analysis on this issue. And we got a bunch of responses to that, and we selected a team that is comprised of nationally renowned constitutional scholars and legal experts. In fact, one of the members of our legal team is referred to by many as the Michael Jordan of constitutional scholars and constitutional law. He's written the 6-volume treatise on the Constitution that is the best reference for judges and lawyers all over the country. His name is Ronald Rotunda. So Professor Rotunda, in presenting this 150-page legal analysis on Utah's claims for the transfer of public lands to the commission last month, December 9th, made this statement. He said, there is no legal or constitutional authority, zero, for the federal government to treat Utah and other Western states like orphans or second-class citizens.
Well, so in terms of his analysis then, what were some of the highlights in terms of whether or not this is in fact allowable under the Constitution? Because that's one of the things you hear from the opponents of it, is that, well, this just isn't even constitutional and that the federal government should be able to keep all this land.
Yeah, there are a number of cases. In fact, they go back to the very beginning from Maryland in the 1770s, 1780s to the constitutional development. And bring it current to a case even 2 years ago where the United States Supreme Court said 2 years ago, the constitutional equality of the states is essential to the harmonious operation of the Republic. Our nation was and is a union of states equal in dignity, power, and authority. Think about that, right? If you've got Oregon at 53% federally controlled land, Utah at 67%, but Iowa is 0.1%. New York is 1%. The states east of the Rockies, less than 4%. Well, states, the western lands, they're being subsidized by folks from the east. And in order to get those subsidies regularly in the federal budget process, they hold those subsidies hostage over western communities' heads to vote for hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars in increased federal spending and growth in the power of the federal government. And that works to a detriment to the liberty of all Americans, both in their pocketbook and in the system that is designed to protect their liberty. And so that's a case from just a couple of years ago that says, no, the federal government has no business, no authority having a back-of-the-bus class of states. Our system requires that the states are strong and self-reliant to be a check on the arbitrary power of the federal government.
Yeah, well, that's the legal analysis that we can proceed on this, but have you guys also done any fiscal or practical analysis in terms of how states would manage this and what that would look like?
Yeah, indeed. In fact, Utah commissioned a $500,000 study that took 18 months by a team of economists from our top three universities, and they looked at, it's a 700-page report. Mm. They looked at all of this, and they determined if we changed nothing about federal management of the land. I mean, if we manage the forest for maximum combustion, just like the federal government does, if we change nothing about the way they manage the land, we could still afford to manage the land. Mm. And then going a step further, the Property and Environmental Research Center out of Bozeman, Montana, last April put out a study called Divided Lands. And it compared state versus federal management of public lands. What they found first was that by all accounts, federal lands are in trouble, both environmentally and economically, and that for every dollar the federal government spends managing public lands, it loses 27 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
For every dollar that the states spend managing public lands, they generate nearly $15 in positive net revenue.
Yeah.
And the environmental quality is better as well. So
yeah, you know, I think
better
I could
help, better productivity.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. I think if I was to sum up that whole 700-page report, it would be, how could we do any worse? All right, Ken, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Always a great pleasure to talk to you about this issue, and it's one that is not going to be solved overnight, and so a long fight ahead of us. And God bless you for your efforts in this.
Exactly right. Thanks, Mark. AmericanLandsCouncil.org, bunch of information there. federalisminaction.org, and then coming soon, freethelands.org. But we've got to get out and get persistent with all of our leaders. Are you relentlessly committed to secure our statehood rights and our equal powers of statehood?
That's right. Great points. Ken, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
It is time for us to get going, but just some final thoughts. At what point do you say enough is enough? Armed conflict, to me, is only the answer when lives are in danger or when there are no other options. Armed conflict in this case was not the right answer because, in reality, we've only just begun the fight. I urge the people at that compound to leave. You've made your point, now go home. And if you truly are about local control, then let the locals handle it. Otherwise, your motives are suspect. As for local control, you have got to get involved. If you're thinking not voting or not being involved is the answer, think again, because that's why we're here. With tens of millions of people sitting on their vote, all that does is lead to what we have right now. Get involved, demand change, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.